You're listening to The New Normal for IT Agility, how modernizing your data infrastructure drives innovation faster. A podcast series from Aberdeen brought to you by Hitachi Vantara. Hosted by Jim Raposa, IT analyst and group director at Aberdeen, with special guests from Hitachi Vantara, Chief Technology Officer Howard Holton, and Global CTO Paul Lewis. And now your host, Jim Raposa.
Trying to resist the modernization of your data center is sort of like trying to swim upstream in a river. You're going to spend a lot of time and energy not getting anywhere, and maybe even going backwards. And there's really no reason any business should be resisting modernization. By modernizing their data infrastructure, organizations see a number of key benefits that provide a strong return on investment and reduce costs and complexity. And when modernization is done right, in conjunction with experienced partners, businesses can easily move forward without wasting time, money, and energy. In this podcast, we'll go over some examples and use cases of how successful businesses have embraced modernization, and we'll offer advice and recommendations on how any organization can start moving downstream to innovation and modernization. I'm Jim Raposa, Research Director at Aberdeen, and joining me today to discuss these issues are Paul Lewis and Howard Holton from Hitachi Vantara. Hi, Paul. Hi, Howard.
Hey there.
Hey.
So, I just want to jump right in. The meat of any kind of transformation, anytime you go to a conference, I think people want to hear the use cases. They want to hear real world examples. Either one of you, I'm going to start with this question. Are there, when you're out there talking to your customers, you're out there working with Hitachi Vantara clients, do you have any real-world examples of how some businesses have modernized and optimized IT and their data infrastructure to really carry out a data center modernization and transformation to help them kind of succeed in today's, new normal in the, the challenges businesses are facing today? Either one of you can jump right in.
So I have two stories I like to tell about digital transformation, and it's really about kind of understanding what digital transformation is, because again, it's not technology, it's about time, right? I think everyone on the call at least is aware of and probably is an Amazon Prime member. I don't know what they offer in Canada. Maybe it's called Amazon Prime. I'm not sure, but that's for Paul. But Amazon Prime, it's a really interesting story. Does anybody know how long it took them to deliver Prime? So they had a brainstorming meeting at Amazon where people were just throwing stuff against the wall to see what stuck. And someone came up with the idea of maybe we could figure out a way to ship every product in to the customer in 2 days. Now, if you think about that, they're a logistics company predominantly, that is an insane thing to say, right? Could you imagine if Best Buy or the grocery store or Walmart had said, hey, maybe we could do free shipping in 2 days, or Costco, free shipping in 2 days. And in 60 days, they enabled it for their entire shipped and sold by Amazon portfolio. They had it marketed, priced, negotiated, all the contracts done, and released to the market. That is, in fact, the goal of digital transformation. The second story I like to tell is Airbnb versus Marriott, because at one point, their market caps were similar. Marriott is the largest real estate company in the world and the largest hotel chain, or close enough for the purpose of the conversation. Both Marriott and Airbnb have exactly the same problem, and that is meeting customer demand. And so they both determine on a Friday night, we don't have enough rooms in New York City. We need to add rooms because we're at capacity. It's a very common problem in New York. So for Marriott, they have to identify where the ideal location will be, how many rooms they need. Does a property exist that they could purchase and acquire, or do they need to do a fresh build? They need to do permitting, they need to do site surveys, they need to do acquisition, buyouts, purchase the land, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's a 5-year process minimum for them. You know what Airbnb does? Airbnb launches a Facebook ad, and by Monday, they've added the rooms they need in the market. By Monday. They're 5 years faster to market than Marriott. That is, in fact, the reason digital transformation works. That is, in fact, the reason that digital transformation is so incredibly powerful. Now, that doesn't mean you need to be Amazon or Airbnb to take advantage of digital transformation. But what it does mean is you need to develop an organizational structure and an organizational culture more than anything that says these are the things that are possible, that says these are how we're going to look at these things, and we're going to back it up by utilizing all of the data available to us, both our data, the data we own, and whatever third-party data sources we can connect with, so we can make smarter decisions faster, so we can deliver more, so we can deliver better. And I just kind of want to finish, and then I'll turn it over with Paul, with the definition of digital transformation. The definition of digital transformation is to change your company to deliver your products in the way your customers wish they could receive them. And the wish is the important part, because nobody ever said, what I really, really want is to sleep on someone else's couch, and yet Airbnb is the size of Marriott. Because what they delivered is not someone else's couch. What they delivered was an experience that doesn't smell like wet paint, that feels like home when you're not at home. And what people really want is they want to feel like they're at home when they're on vacation in a new place.
I think those are perfect examples of digital transformation. And it implements the definition almost exactly. I think I'll add to that, but I think the dimensional take would be the new normal. I'll tell three stories. So the first one is a very micro implementation. It's not all that technologically savvy, but lessons learned within enterprise technology that I find interesting. So the first example is Main Street restaurants and the type of turn they had to make very quickly. Imagine, and as soon as the closing order came down in whatever region they were allocated to, they had to close up their dining room and kitchen completely right that day. They had days or a week to change their entire business. They had very little time to create some sort of web-based presence, because most of their business was locals coming in, sitting in the same bar stool, sitting in the same table, ordering the same pizza. Now they had to change to say, well, I now need to make my menu available for consumption online. They need to subscribe to the Uber Eats so they could have their product delivered when they have never done that before. Then they had to ensure that they created a safe and secure pickup window, so that people could come and find, still get the pizza they were used to getting and line up and socially distance outside. And then they changed the menu to be family oriented. You could make your own tacos or you could have a whole family meal with the entree and desserts and drinks and even alcohol, right? They create a whole new menu to support that. That's a pretty big digital pivot to ensure not just the survivability of mainstream restaurants, but to keep the kitchen staff and the wait staff employed so that they could survive over, you know, the one to many quarters that's going to take. The second store is grocery stores. Well, and what's interesting about grocery stores is that they've actually not only survived, but they've thrived in many ways. People still need food. That will still occur regardless of a pandemic, but they actually far more organized now. When I talk to CIOs of grocery store chains, they enjoy the scheduling aspect because they control the amount of people coming in and the amount of people going through the cashiers. It's not a seasonality problem within the week where you have peaks and valleys of the amount of people shopping. There's an exact amount at all times, and therefore scheduling is very simple. Now they are the distribution channel of all of these products, and they've had to source other products from other means. It's quite possible that their original resellers aren't getting the products that they're used to, so they had to go direct to the producers themselves. They actually had to implement their new distribution channels. They in fact had to create a curbside pickup channel or a deliver to local home channel. And of course, they're right in the front end. They were the essential services. Safety and security became a prime concern because most people touch things in a grocery store, right? You pick up a tomato, you put back a tomato. You pick up a box, you put down the box. everything gets touched. And therefore, they are right in the front of the safety and security of people. And then, of course, it's about products on the shelf. The supply chain was difficult because they don't control the actual raw materials, which had a negative effect on whether products were available. It's quite possible that the run on paper products had missing shelf because, of course, you can't chop down 25% more trees, right? I can't find more raw materials when people are consuming them far faster than before. And that's affecting whether products are on the shelf or not. The final example I'll use are things like banking. And they fall in that sort of changing category where there were parts of banking that in many ways required a physical presence. It could be things like a wet signature when I'm closing my mortgage, or a certain tight customer segment that only went into the branch because they've been doing it for decades upon decades. Well, they had to, in a very short period of time, offer those in-branch services in their digital products, either online or mobile, and they only had days and weeks to do so. So the innovations of things like check capture in the mobile phone or upload into the website was something that had to get done in real time so you didn't have to be physically present, or creating e-drafts and e-transfers, and then educating all those customer segments who have never used those channels because those were the exclusive channels to deliver on. So those are the three interesting digital transformation / IT projects that had to be delivered with this new normal.
Yeah, those are great examples. And yeah, Howard, when you talked about Airbnb and you said, nobody ever said I want to sleep on in some strange house's bed. You know, it similar digital transformation story I always think of is, you know, ride sharing. You know, nobody ever said, I want to walk out and get in some stranger's car. The reason that the digital transformation worked at those was the apps, was the whole ability to say, I don't have to, you know, figure out who a local taxi company is and call them. I don't have to figure out if I have enough cash on hand or if the taxi takes a credit card. I don't even have to try and explain my destination to somebody who maybe doesn't speak great English or doesn't really know the town. The rideshare apps solved all those problems. That was the killer app. It wasn't the stranger's car. It was all of those things, which if taxi companies had ever gotten together and figured out how to do all those exact same things themselves, people would have been just as happy to use an Uber or Lyft that sent a taxi to them, and they didn't have to tell directions or pull out cash or anything like that. It would have worked just as well. But the taxi companies let institutional silos, they let outdated processes and just sort of an out-of-date infrastructure keep them from digital transformation. So kind of with that in mind,
if I could add some commentary to that, that's a great example. I would argue that the problem set there, or the opportunity set there, is a destination problem. So yeah. I have a requirement to leave my house and go to the store, leave my house and go to work. And I have lots of business models to choose from. I could choose to go to a dealership and buy a car. I could choose to go to a dealership and lease a car. I could choose to rent a car. I could choose to hire a cab. I could choose to use Uber. It's really just a set of business models for the exact same problem set that are attracting different customer segments. There will always be people who buy a car, always buy people who choose a cab, always be people who rent a car, always be people who choose Uber exclusively. The purpose here is having a diversification of those models, not a single model.
I think we do need to talk a little bit about the mistake, though, right? Because it speaks directly to the wish and why the wish is important. Cab companies never thought about what do our customers wish they could have right. this experience, right? And it's a wish, it's not a want. Because if you'd have interviewed 1,000 people after they got out of a New York City taxi cab, none of them would have said, I wish there was an app for this. They all would have said, I wish I understood the driver and the driver understood me. I wish I knew when I was going to get there. I wish every time it hit a pothole, I didn't feel like my back was going to break. And oh my God, did I sit in someone else's vomit? Like, they were very, very tactical asks that you would have got in response. But the fact is, the wish is, I wish I knew when the cab would arrive. I wish I knew when I would get there, and I wish I knew how much this would cost. The fact that 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 all of those wishes were fulfilled in an app and in someone else's car doesn't change the fact that the wishes could have easily been solved by the cab companies. Uber invented nothing. All Uber did was deliver to a wish.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was really well said. So that kind of leads into my next question then. So if it, I don't want to be the taxi companies, if I'm a business that's looking to transform and carry out a successful digital transformation, you know, I don't want to be locked in by old processes and out of date. And I want to make sure I am asking the right questions and fulfilling the wishes of my customers. So if I am a business looking to digitally transform, to modernize, to improve my business, I kind of want to ask like two questions. What are some of the new trends, strategies, technologies that I need to be prepared for? And what should I be looking for in partners and services and products that can really help me modernize and not be the taxi companies to Uber? So I'll start with you, Paul, on this one.
Sure. Let's start with the buyer, because I think that we don't spend enough time thinking about it in terms of the CIO and CTO and CMO. Like we're not thinking in terms of what their needs are. So if you look from their needs, they're not really looking for a product. You know, I never bought a product. I never bought an application. Those were that was the end. That was the means to deliver on the project, but it wasn't the thing I was buying, right? The thing I was buying was a relationship. The thing I was buying was trust. The thing I was buying was knowing the person who was going to answer the phone at 3 a.m. when that thing was down. I was buying future conversations, future innovations. I wanted to ensure that my partner had a deep sense of my industry, an understanding of my company and where it played in that industry, the types of things that was important to my business, how I made money, how I spent money, what my assets were, who my customers and customer segments were, you know, what was my key value proposition. I wanted them to know who my IT team was and how my IT team got measured. I needed them to know what my future IT strategy was, what my currency was, who were my influencers, what was my buying pattern, what was more important to me personally, both within the company and career-wise. These were the things that were most important on how I made IT decisions. And I think that translated into companies that I spent time with that were more than the individual widget. I'm not saying I didn't buy individual widgets. Everybody does, right? There's thousands of applications, thousands of tools. But if I were going to have a strategic partner with an organization, I would have a strategic partnership with somebody who was as important to that industry as I am. You know, I'll use Hitachi as an example, and I'm sure Howard will jump in on it. So Hitachi is one of those organizations that is just like me. In fact, we always say Hitachi is more like you than any other technology provider, because I know that I'm looking for a partner that's in the same industry I'm doing. If I'm a CIO of a hospital, are you providing modalities? If I'm a bank, are you providing payment systems and ATMs? If I'm a construction company, do you create construction equipment? If I'm in retail, do you have stores? If I'm in manufacturing, do you manufacture products? And if I'm an IT shop, do you actually operate IT? Right? These are the partnership requirements of a buyer. Howard, what do you think?
I would take that I like to double click on that. Right. Not only do we understand hospitals, we own and operate five. Mm-hmm. Right. Not only do we understand financial services, we have financial services that's anything from consumer banking all the way up to financial interest in financing the bullet trains that we also manufacture as part of our 250 plus manufacturing companies. Right. To Paul's point, we build construction equipment. We also do IoT for one of the largest competitors to that exact construction equipment. We have 110,000 plus patents and are patent leaders in all of those industries that we talked about. And what's really unique about Hitachi, not to make this a full-on commercial, is our technology is not the result of a marketing exercise, but rather the result of trying to solve the problem contained in the operations of one of our 826 sister companies. And for me, that's a company I want to partner with, right? Those are the things I want. I want to be able to interact with someone I consider to be a peer who understands what it's like in the trenches, not someone who just understands what is it like to push me a purchase order. And I think that makes a huge difference.
On the technology trend side of your question, I'm always about practical application. While it's interesting to know the future of, let's say, quantum computing, or DNA storage, and it's important to keep up to speed on where they are in the maturity, it's mostly about what's I can apply now in a real sense to give me some sort of efficiency or jump ahead of my competitor. How can I create value for my business so that they can, you know, acquire a customer segment they currently don't acquire now, or create an experience they currently don't have? So in its real applicability sense, you know, you have to think of machine learning as a means to create predictive or prescriptive analytics within your infrastructure application environment. You want to use blockchain for the purpose of general ledgers or interconnectivities, interbank type transactions. You want to use a containerization for the purpose of movement of applications, not just within your local environment, but across into a multi-cloud environment, and then have that diversification ability. Not to take away from the architectural fallacy of actually moving between clouds, but you do want to be able to create a platform so that you can migrate and modernize quicker, and that containerization actually allows that to occur in amongst a variety of other technology innovations.
So I have a couple of notes on kind of best practices for digital transformation when you're kind of thinking about that. The first is, does the project make a hero in your company, right? Like you don't have to think about, I need to be the next Airbnb, but rather you can think about what is a measured difference I can make in my company that enables that sense of agility, that sense of change, that sense of data-driven decision-making, right? And so the first question should be, am I making a hero within the organization? Because the reality is, digital transformation is a journey of a million steps. And I say it that way because it doesn't really ever end. It doesn't really ever stop, right? Uber didn't stop by enabling taxis, right? Uber's question was, how fast can I get a car to anyone in the United States? They answered that by saying the average is 7 minutes. The next question was, what would you pay to have delivered to you in 7 minutes? And it's why Uber Eats was the next thing they did, because you'd pay to have a car deliver you food in 7 minutes, right? The fact is, the destination isn't actually the point. The journey is the point. And so the very first thing is, can I make a hero with the first step of this journey? If I can make a hero, great, we move on to step two. Step two is, can I budget it? If I conceptualize what I want to do, can I come up with a budget for it? Not do I have the money, but there's a lot of stuff where you sit down and you go, I think this would be great to do. And then you go, okay, cool. How much would it cost? And no one knows where to start. And I would say step three is a fundamental change to your organization. And that is, there is no such thing as a project anymore. Because just like I said, digital transformation doesn't have an end. Every project has an end. So start thinking about it as products. And a life cycle of products made up of 1,000 little projects, all of which have their own milestones, all of which have their own gates. But the fact is, we don't complete it and then walk away. We finish the stage, we finish the step, and we move to the next one in the life cycle management. And if you want to be successful, that is absolutely required. You can no longer complete a project and then walk away from it. It must become part of your life cycle management. And if you don't have the resources to maintain it, you go back to square one. Right? How am I going to maintain this long term?
Which rounds out the conversation back to people capability, right? In order to implement a product environment, one needs to hire product managers, right? Someone needs to understand how to look at a product lifecycle as distinct from a project lifecycle, that it has releases, that it has themes, and those themes need to deliver on some sort of business value. And I need to communicate those themes out as if they were products in an evolutionary state, that they have replaceable parts, that they're have individual KPIs associated with them, that I can treat them as a sprint in an agile application development environment. Well, those are a set of skills you probably don't have that you need to acquire. You know, upskill, reskill, replace a team, and grow your team in order to bring those capabilities into your organization. If I'm going to shift from a application-centric or infrastructure-centric project-based IT organization into a data-centric product-based IT organization, that requires different people and different leaders. In fact, the whole new normal has showcased who can or cannot lead. And especially if those leaders are used to management by walking around. Well, in a federated sense, one can't do that. And the same is true for a leader that has to have a sort of a product mindset versus a project mindset. It boils down to people capabilities.
Paul and Howard, that was really good recommendations you offered there for businesses looking to transform and do a digital transformation and the things they need to consider. You know, and I really like those discussions. It kind of gets back to some of the things we've been talking about throughout all of these podcasts about, you know, we've mentioned how every business is sort of an application developer, a software company, how every business is a data company. And really, when you talk about kind of not having this, oh, this project starts and ends mindset, that really plays into everything from agile to being an innovative company that is, you know, that you kind of understand that, you, like you said, none of these things really end. It's just a constant iteration of innovation and change and moving forward to not just meet these new challenges, but to better serve your customers, better serve your business overall. And, you know, this kind of pays off in other ways. You know, when Aberdeen looks at our research, it isn't just about these competitive advantages, which are great, you know, but they pay off in, you know, sort of bottom line things. When we look at businesses that have transformed, that have done data infrastructure modernization, they've cut IT expenses. They've been able to deploy new servers, applications more quickly. They're able to really scale capacity to meet new data demand. They have less complexity in data management, and they just see better performance and faster data access. So this kind of transformation and modernization really pays off. And when you think about, you know, transformation, about new technologies and innovation, it is about riding that current, you know, following those trends and really gaining benefits. You know, we talked about swimming up current. Transforming is not fighting against innovation and wasting resources and losing out to those more agile competitors. You know, and to get where your business needs, you need a clear vision into your current infrastructure needs. You like we said, you know, what am I doing right? What am I doing wrong? What do I need to do? And you got to figure out where you want to be in the near future. And we've seen in our research how successful businesses have made this transformation. They do this by working with partners to modernize their infrastructure quickly without time lost to complexity or inexperience. And we found that when businesses stop swimming against the current, to go back to our original metaphor, and follow transformative practices and stop treating things as projects and understand it's all about being an agile and innovative business, they're really able to bring their data infrastructure into the modern age. So I want to thank everyone for joining us, and you can look for other podcasts in this series on data center modernization.